it's going to taste this one, but you know, it's the next batch or the batch after that going to be, you know, just like this. Mm-hmm. So that's always the challenge.
Yeah. And it's just like mezcal cocktails are like life. When in doubt, make a margarita.
And this one is like, I think of everything we've been tasting today, it's the finish just goes on and on and on, where a lot of them are, when we say they're clean, I mean, they're hitting you on the palate and then they're almost immediately gone. This one, I can still, it's still lingering. I think it's kind of, I might want to change my rating up.
That's a big one. Mm-hmm.
Are there other Vago products that you can recall off the bat about it, Michael?
The Elote one.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It is. I love that. It's a very unique version in the lineup. And I almost, you know, I really love that as well. But the story here that we're going over is Espadine. But I agree. I love that Elote version as well. It's not as, when somebody says, you know, I'm going after corn, it's like, whoa, this is going to be, you know, very abrasive. And it's exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah. I love that one as well. Well, you know, so far we're cooking along and I really appreciate all of the Espadines that we've gone so far. I'm really looking forward to this next one because mm-hmm. it's not just about the mezcal, but it is about family. It's about festival. It is about, you know, all of the culture that's surrounding this. And you don't get a lot of this particular product that actually crosses the border. So Pachuca, I'm really Pachuca. Looking forward to not only talking about this particular product, but, you know, you get to hear a lot more about how these products have been incorporated into the cultures, you know, that they're made as well. So I'm looking forward, you know, to part of that discussion. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed following along with us so far, and we'll be back right after this break.
With Pachuca.
With Pachuca.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing. We've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right. Keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
Hey, welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On today's episode, we are going over mezcals that are made with Espadine, which is a variety of agave plant. And we've gone over some really great products so far. The last product I went over was Mezcal Vago Ensemble Ambaro, which we rated a 4.
That's
so
classified.
And, you know, we talked a little bit about some cocktails, you know, that we've kind of approached, you know, with making. But it's this next storyline that Carrie Ann's going to go over that all of a sudden it's going to be weaving culture in a spirit with mezcal as well. So I look forward to this.
Tequila is life. Mezcal is life. So our next product is Gracias a Dios Pachuca de Guajolote. How's that sound? Mezcal artisanal. It's an Espadine. It's a Joven. And it's very delicious. It is made in a copper still. It is made by Oscar Hernandez Santiago. This is lot 110 with only 200 bottles produced. Gracias a Dios Pachuca is made with agave espadine, wild turkey, not the bourbon, and fresh fruit. Mezcalero Oscar Hernandez made this special release in honor of the Day of the Dead, which has a massive celebration in Oaxaca. After the party for the special release, after the party for the Day of the Dead, Oscar used all of the fruit that people had brought to him to make this mezcal pechuga. Before the second distillation, wild turkey meat and fresh fruit were added to the distillate to create this special festive mezcal. The fruit were added were local cocoa, pecans, bananas, apples, pineapples, and raisins, which could be why I thought it tasted like rum. The nose is very strong, peppery, and very much a lot. It's hot. It's going to give you some Caribbean flavor. I think blind tasting this, I wouldn't off the bat peg it as a mezcal, but the flavor, it incorporates a lot of like cinnamon, allspice, poblano pepper, ground white corn, and it does fill your mouth. Thick viscosity and long lasting from the rich coating.
Some of my own tasting notes here. The first thing I wrote down was complex. It's just very well balanced, is the way I would describe, you know, this. This is not more of the same. You know, if there's a corner where which one of these things is not like the other, this is totally, you know, in a very different experience. You know, it was very subtle. You know, I didn't find that there was something that was just jumping out at me that was saying, hey, this is the dominant, you know, flavor profile. I just really was really good. I mean, I love the storyline as well. And I just, it's interesting when, you know, I always tell people when I'm traveling that the way I tend to enjoy traveling is through food. Because if you know the food of the region, you know the people of the region. And that includes, you know, alcohol as well and other drinks and products that are available. And I think that this to me was saying, what would, you know, the town of Santiago Matalan actually, you know, taste like in a glass? And to me, that's what I'm tasting is the culture of that environment. Michael, what'd you think?
I thought it was really cool. The thick mouthfeel is really nice. It makes me want to drink it like after a meal. It makes me want to drink it like after Thanksgiving or Christmas. It reminded me, one of my tasting notes is figgy pudding at Christmas. So it had that vibe to it, which was really cool. There's just not a lot of things like this. And you were talking about traveling and having cool spirits. Reminds me a little bit of Pitoro in Puerto Rico.
Oh, that's an excellent example.
If you're in Puerto Rico and you go to like a small restaurant, maybe at somebody's house. We went to one where it was just like a family cooking, you know, whole red snapper. And then at the end of the meal, they would offer you their own family recipe of Pitoro. They were using like tamarind and pineapple in theirs. But I had another one when we were on the island where people were using coconut. A lot of coconut, a lot of spices. And I know that's like their own rum that they make and then add a bunch of different ingredients. Families have different recipes. They usually pull it out around Christmas time, bury it in the backyard, pull it back out. So that's pretty, it reminds me of that.
Hmm. That's funny. I was going to say like Clarin in Haiti, because everybody has their own example. Way to go. It's just now commercially available in the U.S. But that's something very personal to each family and what kind of Clarin they might make or distribute amongst their friends. I think like that community, that sense of community and what it brings together. And I love the idea that this is made from the fruits that they brought this guy. Because I think like the reason it tastes like rum to me is where rum is made from sugar cane. Now you're adding in the sugars from these fruits and all of the flavors we might get out of sugar cane that would equal pineapple or banana are actually in there. And it's just really cool in your mouth.
Yeah, let's rate this up and then continue our conversation. So what's your rating going to be here for the pechuga? How about that? Wow.
Oh my goodness.
So our sips rating here for the Gracias a Dios pechuga el jolonte. Boy, I really butchered that. It was a 5. But so the one example that the one example I was going to throw out when I think of, you know, combining culture and a beverage is limoncello. Because, you know, in Italian cultures, the dowry that is paid for on the bride's side is the limoncello recipe that is only passed around through a point of marriage. And it's, you know, you
have... Spoiler, it's lemon and sugar.
Yeah. hey, you know, I've seen a lot of nonas that go, mine is much better than yours. So, I love the storyline, but more importantly, I really, really love this. And if you can get your hands on, you know, a Pechuga, hopefully you'll have the opportunity to enjoy it, much like we have today.
Worried about the whole wild turkey thing?
No.
It is more for the ceremony of it, and the steam is going up through the turkey, and then being dripped back down. It's all alcohol
at the end of the day.
I know.
It's ornamental wild turkey.
What'd you guys think of this flight?
I'd do it again.
Great example.
Really amazing. Yeah. All kinds of different varieties. You've got light, subtle, clean. You've got big smacking you in the face, roasted vegetables. And then we started off with like stone fruit, pear, lemongrass. Really cool.
And the smoke is all over the place from hardly noticeable to a good part of the tasty notes.
Well, I hope you'll check out Mezcal Espadines on your own, because such a great variety of things you'll get to enjoy. Well, I want to thank my co-host for being here. Carrie Ann, tell us anything you got going on, and tell us, you know, what's your favorite color of the day if you want to.
Black, always black. I have a lot going on, which will be revealed soon. Straight up 615 on Instagram and .com.
Good old boy, Michael. Thanks for being here. Tell us all about Liquid Gold with books and anything else.
Yeah, you can find my books at MikeWolfBooks.com. I feel like people who listen to the agave episodes would like my book Cheer, which has a whole agave section and tiki section as well. Next up, I'll be working on a book about trees. So,
wow. What about
this Pechuga in a tiki drink?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Definitely. Pechuga Mai Tais for the win.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, this is good boy Mike asking you to come back and to keep on sipping.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap.
Just tap it in.
The subscribe button.
Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
The easiest way to listen to our show is to ask Siri, Alexa, Google, Uncle Larry, or whoever it is that talks to you on your phone. Play podcast, Sip Suds and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our tasting notes flow out on Twitter and Instagram with our handle @sipsudsandsmokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with the thousands,
millions,
and millions
of other fans on those social media platforms. Do us a favor. Take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. Come back, join us for another episode, and keep on sipping.
Been a 110 Hand production of Sip Suds and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the dude in the basement studios, your host, the good old boys, will see you all next time.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Burnaby.
The Florida Keys extend from the state's peninsula like a string of pearls. And pearls they are, in their uniqueness and value. Stands of hardwood trees originating in the West Indies rise above the island's level ground. These trees draw many birds of the Caribbean to the Keys' tropical habitat. Listening on Key West to mangrove cuckoos and gray kingbirds, you might imagine yourself in Cuba or the Bahamas, and you might see another Caribbean bird, the white-crowned pigeon. The adult has a brilliant white crown and white iris. It sounds a lot like a mourning dove. It's a fruit eater that includes native figs and the fruit of the poisonwood tree in its diet. Like pigeons the world over, white crowns play an important role in spreading seeds. The birds swallow fruits and deposit some of the seeds on the hardwood knolls, also called hammocks. Without the pigeons, there might be no tropical hardwood hammocks in the Keys. But without the hammocks, there would be no white-crowned pigeons in Florida. If you're curious about the unique habitats of the Florida Keys and what can be done to protect them, check out the link on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
She's so wonderful.
Hi, it's Mike Shepherd, and you're listening to the Noise of Carpet Radio on CJSF 90.1 FM and CJSF.ca.
She's so wonderful.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When a building gets knocked down, its wooden boards and beams typically get destroyed too. In the U.S., tens of millions of tons of lumber end up in landfills or incinerators each year. But Eric Law of the company Urban Machine says much of this wood could be reused instead.
So it's a massive amount of material that's still high-quality material. It's still completely intact. It's still got good length to it.
Before it can be reused, though, all the nails, screws, and staples must be removed.
And that process is incredibly labor-intensive.
So Law's company created a robotic machine that's now in use near San Francisco. It locates metal fasteners in pieces of lumber and extracts them using pincers. It can process thousands of feet of material each day. He says making it more efficient to reuse lumber could pay off for builders and the climate. Trees absorb and store carbon. When they're used for lumber, much of the carbon remains locked away in the wood. But if the wood decays in a landfill or is burned, it releases climate-warming pollution. Reusing lumber helps limit that pollution, and it means fewer new trees need to be cut down, so it could reduce the construction industry's impact on the climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now come, and the nose is now pierced.